Houston and these guys trying to go for it. There ain't no weapons of mass destruction.
I'm here too. My baby's house.
Isn't that amazing?
Ain't got no factories to make them in. Talking about.
Good Lord.
Sean, just not
little. You know what should be happening? You know what should be happening here?
Can't fire no weapons. Don't have no weapons.
Oh, well.
Don't even have no weapons of a little destruction.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. Can't find nothing. I looked everywhere. I looked under the carpet. The Iraqi carpet. I looked under the sofa at the presidential palace. I can't find no weapons of mass destruction. But there never was any. Because the sanctions worked. Said the sanctions worked. I said the sanctions worked.
Oh, well, these are...
The inspections work too. Oh, Hans Blix. You're tougher than we thought. Oh, Mr. Blix. Give back my weapons. Ain't got no weapons. Mass destruction. Charles Dolfer, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow, weapons of mass destruction. That's beautiful. It's very touching. You know what should be happening?
What?
All of these people that used to call up and give us grief.
Can't find no sarin.
Should be gone. Sorry. They should be calling up here apologizing.
That's right. They should be issuing apologies.
Seeking our...
Because one of the other things that we said, not to rub it in, not to be obnoxious, you know...
Well, I think we should rub it in.
Okay, let's rub it in. When Dimi says, as far as we can tell, because of the vice... Put on Saddam Hussein, fire the weapons inspections and the sanctions and stuff like that.
The no-fly zones.
We repeatedly said that he had been reduced to being the mayor of Baghdad. He was no longer really able to run his own country, and he certainly wasn't able to pose any gathering threat. We said all that. I said we said all that. But nobody listened. I said we talked till we're blue in the face. Ah, Mr. Limbaugh. How are you going to spin it? I got those Dolfer Report blues.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that I mean, I'm sure this will confirm all the misery-mongering ditto heads who are sitting there rubbing their little fleshy little palms together and stuff. Listen,
you know what I'm worried about, though? I'm afraid before the show's over, you're going to retreat. That's what I'm concerned about.
Well,
you're going to pull a John Kerry and retreat.
No, what I wonder about is how, I mean, I think I'm actually asking this with a reasonably pure heart as opposed to a Bush-hating heart. Because really, I don't have Bush hate in my heart. In my heart, I have a Dennis Hastert kind of love.
And that's a special kind of love.
I got a Dennis Hastert kind of love in my heart. But I mean, I don't understand, in other eras, I think, or at least on certain Star Trek episodes I've watched, something like the Dolfer Report would just, that would be it, you know? That would be the end of the presidency of somebody who committed 138,000 troops to war on the premise that we had to get this guy because he was a gathering threat because there were weapons of mass destruction over there. To have a report come out that said, no, there weren't any weapons of mass destruction. The sanctions, which you sneered at, were working. The inspections, which you demeaned, were working. And not only weren't there any weapons, there weren't any factories to make any more weapons in, and their capacity to get factories back up and running and making weapons was actually declining year to year as opposed to improving year to year. I mean, you know, in a lot of saner eras, that would be it. The two guys who masterminded this war on the premise that there was and got 138,000 troops and disrupted American life and got a lot of people killed, both Iraqis and U.S., to say nothing of endangering some of those Polish troops.
Both of them.
Yeah. You know, they would just have pages called. They just say, we're really sorry. We're leaving now, okay? So the Speaker of the House or whoever will be running the country until next January, and then, you know, please give President Kerry a warm welcome on our behalf. We got to go now, though. Bye. We're really sorry. We're sorry we did this. We screwed up. We're sorry. Goodbye. I mean, really, in a lot of worlds, that's kind of what would have to happen at this point. But it doesn't. Instead, it's like, as somebody else kind of pointed out, he's like, I mean, he's like Clinton in a sense, you know, although Clinton never did. I don't think, you know, Clinton never really screwed up at this level. But there's this, he just sort of is walking through this downpour, but he's not getting wet.
And he's gutsy, too. I mean, all this stuff gets dumped on you, and then you start talking about this. Well, if John Kerry's elected, he's going to retreat. We're going to back right out of this whole thing. He's not going to fight this war. It's always interesting how these accusations are made, but how do we know that's the case?
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, look, I understand that because of the way things are, you know, Bush is not going to, for example, resign for the Dofer report. But I don't understand why it's not really sort of seriously politically damaging.
He doesn't need to. He has like 7,000 apologists all over the country, talk radio for the most part, apologizing for him every single day and spinning this thing and making excuses, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
That's your liberal media. You know the liberal media.
Yeah, the liberal media.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't get it. I mean, I'm not worried about this. I'm not upset about it. It's just sort of an interesting thing to me, basically. And I do think that it's further proof, and I know this is going to get the Democrats, now that I got the Republicans upset, I mean, I like to get the Democrats upset, too, that Kerry is a terrible candidate. Because, in fact, I mean, this has proved that, you know, this guy mobilized 138,000 troops on a charade, a complete charade. And the charade that he probably understood was a charade, too. As Howard Dean said last night at the Connecticut Forum, you know, in Paul O'Neill's book, or the book about Paul O'Neill, or whatever it was, you know, Paul O'Neill recounted that Bush said something like 8 months before September 11th, at the first cabinet meeting or something, we're going to Iraq, we're going to go get that miserable. I mean, that's, you know, that's when the plan was made. But, you know, so that doesn't work. And the deficit's huge. And it hasn't created any jobs. And the environment's a mess. No Child Left Behind is a joke. And he's, like, tied with Kerry. I don't get that. It seems to me Soupy Sales should be able to beat this guy.
Is Soupy Sales alive? Soupy Sales, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, even if he were dead, Soupy Sales, you know, it could be like Ashcroft, you know?
Right.
I mean, I would say a dead, you know, what would we call Soupy Sales?
And, you know, I really don't know.
Class radio personality.
Right.
Should be
only ever did hit people with pies.
Yeah. Thing.
Seltzer, that
if
kind
he
of
had
stuff.
White Fang as his running mate. Didn't he have something called White Fang on his show?
Soupy Sales.
Soupy Sales, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, you got me. I don't
Didn't
recall.
You work with Soupy Sales for a while?
No, not really. One of the few.
Well, anyway, I don't mean to beat the Soupy Sales thing to death. Yeah. All I'm saying is, it shouldn't be very hard to beat these guys. I mean, nothing they do works, and very little that they say is true. So if you had, like, even a sort of a halfway decent candidate, I'd say it would be over at this point.
Well, let's see. Shall we go to these calls? I noticed some of our lines are clogged up here, but I
yes,
think
but
we
they're all guys, so we're going to open up the women's line to 1-800-953-1080. 1-800-953-1080, if you are a woman, or if you are considering becoming a woman.
Right. I have a feeling these lines are going to unclog very soon.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Here's a...
We value the contributions of many people. I think Tim from Manchester is a great caller. I just know. And you know, can I just say one more thing about this, which is that I think here in the state of Connecticut, really, you know, I mean, talk radio is so, yeah, I mean, we get these calls, particularly from 3 to 4, from these people who hate us and they like Bush. You know, and they hate us because they think we're, you know, we're destroying or trying to destroy Bush and stuff like that. And, you know who they all are? They're either Steve in his car, or John in his car, or Bob, who's either in his car or in New Britain. You know, I mean, generically, that's who they are. I mean, I only know who those people are, but that's who they are.
Yeah.
But you know who they all are? They're all salesmen, and they're angry because they're not selling very many things. And the reason they're not selling anything is because they have horrible personalities. But since they don't want to face that, they think they want to believe there's something structurally wrong with America.
So they want to transfer the hate that they have for themselves. They want to transfer the hate to you and to me.
They basically think that if we could bomb more people and throw more people off of welfare, they'd sell more widgets. But that's not really true. They're never going to sell very many widgets because they're unpleasant. And people don't buy things from you when you're unpleasant. They wait for you to go away.
You know, don't you think there is a theory also that...
You just turn that open sign over so it is closed when they see your Buick coming up the driveway.
They might buy just a little something to just get rid of you.
Maybe.
Not much.
Three widgets. That's all I'm good for.
I think you're onto something. I really do.
That's who there is, you know. And I mean, I'm not saying that nobody else is going to vote for Bush, but that's who we hear from, basically. And I'm tired of talking to them. Now, a little pronunciation note here. This is something we've been going over back in the back rooms here of the hideous off-world colony where we were. And Angela Dias and I both make a point of saying Cheney.
I thought that was how he preferred to have it.
That's the reason we do it. We don't do it to slight him, but quite the contrary. I read, and I think probably Angela read the same story quite some time ago, like when he was first nominated or something, that he was point blank asked how they pronounce the name, and he said Cheney. Well, nobody does that. Everybody says Cheney, like Ron Cheney or something like that. Well,
yeah.
But that's not how the family pronounces it. They pronounce it just the same way that the Connecticut Cheneys, as in Cheney Hall, all the Manchester Cheneys. They say Cheney too, and it's not Cheney Hall, it's Cheney Hall. So that's why we do it. And now other people are doing kind of vowel creep, you know, around here. They're trying to get away from that A sound towards the E sound. But anyway, that's why we do it. We don't do it to slight anyone. We do it, you know, because that's about how the family, as far as we can tell. I mean, as Dana pointed out, she's heard Lynn Cheney say Cheney. So,
well, I was under the impression that's how he wanted to pronounce.
Yeah, I think that is.
So that's why I pronounce it that way, because that's how he wants it.
But as Dan says, most of the network correspondents say Cheney. And Bill healed this trend in by saying that the problem can be bypassed by simply saying Vice President Hellbeast.
That's a thought.
That's not really a proposal that we're prepared to adopt at this point.
But it's a good one.
Should we talk to Lucy? I don't recognize the name Lucy. Dark Maw.
You don't mean that.
The Blueback Square controversy.
You don't mean that.
Well,
for the last time.
If this isn't over by October 13th, I'm moving to another planet. But joining us right now are, in fact, the opponents of Blueback Square, not the only opponents of Blueback Square, Joe Visconti and Susan Schaffman. Are you Save the Center? Is that your organization?
Save the Center Committee.
There's like more than one.
There's a couple other groups out there.
People's Liberation Movement of West Hartford.
Yeah,
like that, you know. to explain it, well, first of all, we've got to back up. And for those people who just basically have been tuning this thing out, like me, for example, at this point, we need to explain what Blueback Square is. I'll let you guys explain what Blueback Square is.
Go get him, Sue.
Yeah. Trying to use, like, Hieronymus Bosch.
We've been trying to figure out what Blueback Square is for months now, and it just keeps changing and changing. The more we read, the more we study the details, and we now understand why our council had a problem really deciding on it. I don't think they had the time or opportunity to really delve into the details that we've been delving into. So I don't know what Blueback Square really is. It just keeps growing and growing.
Well, I think one of the things it'll consist of are two large concrete parking garages housed in an outside mall. I think really that's...
And there'll be a residential component. There supposedly will be
possibly medical
offices.
In the master agreement, they have the opportunity to opt out of the residential.
Yeah, last night at the Hartford Club, some of the developers did admit that there is the opportunity to not build if there's a problem with interest rates or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. But what's proposed anyway is a mix of residential, some parking, movie theaters or sort of movie screens, as I said, doctor's offices, retail.
Yeah, you know, the thing with the movie theaters, that's a real big thing. They're calling them art theaters, If you look at the master agreement, anyone interested, you'll find that the first run feature films, anything can be played there. So, you know, with the mask of an art theater, it's really a big six-screen theater, and call it what it is.
Yeah. I think the master agreement does forbid the playing of any Steven Seagal movie. they at least are willing to go that far. Well, I mean, accepting the fact that that parcel is going to... Well, but we should explain once again. This is in West Hartford Center. It's kind of on the eastern edge of what you would call West Hartford Center. It's sort of a more or less sort of along Raymond Road in West Hartford, if that means anything to you. Now, that parcel is going to develop one way or the other. So what's the problem with this particular version of that development? Keeping in mind that if you guys vote this thing down on Tuesday, we're coming in with a proposal to put Bruce's Club, which is a big box discount. They're very popular in Maine.
22 stories high.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of talk about what's going near Big Box Thread. That's been something we don't like to hear the developer talking about. But Ronald DeWall, which is the vice chair of Saks Fifth Avenue, is a major investor of this. And we're wondering why they haven't been speaking. Saks Fifth Avenue is the big box. Saks Fifth Avenue. Why do we hear Target? People are not even connected to. Their first main connection is Saks, which would be great on the Grody site. That should be the real threat if they want to threaten a development if this was shut down. And I think a lot of avoidance and deception of what really Blueback is has been put in the agreement and the propaganda of the developers.
Well, what is it that you don't like about this? I mean, what bothers you the most? Why have you...
Number
spent
one,
so much
for me,
lives?
I don't know about Sue, but for me personally, I think the town has got a jewel. Our town, Board of Ed, building all of our land. Mm-hmm. And to close it off to one developer, this part, not open it up to find out what it really is worth, and really put 40% of the money in, $48 million plus $13 million in real estate, we should be getting at least 30 to 40% out of it through special service tax or whatnot. Not a lousy $2.6 million that may never manifest. We should, if you wanted to build it this big, if you wanted to build it bigger, we should be getting wealthy as a town off this jewel, not close the deal for one developer and tell us 2.6 maybe is the best thing.
So the developer was putting $48 million in.
No, we're putting...
Well, in what sense are you guys putting that in? Just because the town co-signs the bond issue?
No, we're putting $48 million in bond, and we're going to give a majority of it to him to build the garages and sell them back to us at zero. Obviously, we pay for so we're subsidizing his development. He needs the garages, or he can't build this mammoth thing he's building.
Mm-hmm.
So we are also interfering in the national retail market. We're actually getting involved. People are bringing up the mall, but listen, everybody has to understand. They have a right to defend their position. I'm not going to defend them.
Mm-hmm.
But if they lose some tenants to him, are we shifting our tax base? Why are we building, this thing and getting involved with national retail without a big payoff?
Yeah. Well, once again, I mean, I thought the $48 million was for public improvements, not for parking garages.
No, parking garages and public improvements equal $48
million.
$23 million of it is the parking garages.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is...
And the revenue is supposed to pay it off, to be fair. The revenue and the parking fees is supposed to pay that back over the course of 20 years.
Yeah.
And the general obligation bonds are the way to pay it. Normally, the revenue bonds. Do feasibility studies, you figure out what it's going to cost, you get your letters of intent lined up to prove you can actually fill the space, the retail space, and the garages obviously will then be filled, and you put no risk on the taxpayer.
I mean, public-private partnerships are pretty common in this
Yeah, but it should be a true partnership. You put 40%, you get 40% out.
Well, not only is it true, but it's usually done in an economically declining area. And I would be hard-pressed to find anybody that would say that West Harvard Center is an economically depressed area.
Yeah.
Not always in an economically. I mean, to outside eyes, to my eyes anyway, it looks like the developers are putting a lot of money into public improvements, more so than, I mean,
we're paying for all the public improvements. They're, all the public of the $48 million that's going into the addition to the town hall, addition to the library. That's our money going in. We're putting money over to him to do the work. And that's another thing we don't like. Why don't we just take $48 million and put out our own construction manager, do our own improvements? Why does he have to touch our money?
So you're saying the developer is putting no money into public
improvement? No. He's putting his own money into his own development.
Wait, I'll vote into public improvement.
No.
We had the mayor of West Harvard in here yesterday.
Well, he can tell you there's a little square area that we can use in the middle of his development, but for the most part, he's going to own, hundreds of thousands of square feet.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be, in 20 years, probably up to 70, 80, 90, 100 dollars a square foot retail, totally owned by himself. We're going to hold a bag and 75 cents an hour extra over 21 years on the parking fees, deteriorating garages. Why is he going to get $100 a foot in 20 years in a retail while we get this non-performing loser asset of a garage that's just going to be deteriorating? I think the deal just should be shifted more so we get wealthy. Build it, let us get wealthy as a town.
So you want to build something like this?
I think we should build something, of course. Everybody's been painting us like, no, we don't want to build anything. Yeah. And we're the environmentalists that don't want to build anything. I'm a building contractor. We should build. Mm-hmm. We should have it open to figure out how much is a true public-private partnership. How do you put that criteria together at the beginning of the day? Mm-hmm. How do you figure out, listen, we'll all put $160 million in, we'll put 40% in, and we're going to get this out. Who decided that?
Yeah.
This is crazy.
You talk very fast. I mean, how do you explain the fact that the council, the town council, Republicans and Democrats, voted unanimously in favor of this thing? Virtually every major civic organization in West Hartford, from the Chamber of Commerce to, you know, I mean, everybody looks at this, signs off on it, says that it's good. I mean, is everybody just being duped and you guys are the only ones who can figure out what a scam this is?
I think one of the most important things with the council is that, yeah, they did spend a lot of time in public hearings, but one of the things they did back in January is they had the foresight to ask for independent analysis, mm-hmm. traffic, economic, parking,
mm-hmm.
and that was never done. I mean, they ordered it back in January. We were like, great, we'll finally get a true picture of what this might really mean.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was provided back to them was peer-reviewed data of the data that was provided by the developers. Let's face it, the developers are biased. They're coming in here to make money off of our town.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. They're not here to give us a gift. They're here to make money off the town of West Hartford. And so they provided us with data and their sales pitch. And so from that point on, we didn't have any true, unbiased information.
Speaking of traffic, we have to go and report something, so we'll get back to this. Susan Chapman, they are from Save the Center, the primary group opposing Blueback Square, the development on the eastern edge of West Hartford Center. The vote is on Tuesday in West Hartford. We're discussing off air what you think is going to happen. What if the other thing happens? Let's say that Blueback Square prevails and the two yes votes go through. Are you guys done at that point, or will you just keep fighting? And
no, we're done.
Yeah.
We're done. We brought the people the opportunity and to the charter to vote.
Mm-hmm.
People in town are going to vote. There's been a lot of history of the town giving away land. People have been upset for years. This time they have a chance to vote and make the decision.
Yeah, there's
the
no
karma of the town.
There's no more provisions in the charter to bring it back.
Yeah. And okay, let's say that you prevail on Tuesday. What do you think should happen after that? I mean, what do you want the town to do? What would you press for at that point?
Well, first, the town's going to have to stop and take a look at what happened, why it happened, and assess for themselves what they think they would like to do as a council and as town management. And they should be meeting with all the groups opposed and everyone and really sit down and say, you know, 4,000 people on petitions is not a drop in the bucket. Plus, if there's a turnout of 40-50% and the majority of maybe 10,000 votes we predict will be out there, that's a lot of people to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And they really have to address the public.
I mean, one thing that some people would say is that the town just went through a vote on the budget 2 weeks before this, and the budget was voted in. But even so, this is a financially challenged town, and like a lot of towns in this area, they're chasing grand lists. That's one of the reasons this proposal is in front of people right now, is that they're looking for property that can generate tax revenue. What would be your answer if there's another vote on the budget a year or two from now and there's just sort of not enough money and that whatever that amount of money is, whether it's $2.3 million or what that they thought they were going to get from Blueback isn't coming in? What's your response to that?
Mine?
Yeah.
I think the town really has to go through a lot of reformation the way they do business. First of all, we've got about $6 million that didn't come in from the state for education, so we wouldn't even have a deficit, a shortfall in raised taxes if that was there. So they have to push the state hard for the money that they deserve on the education side. If this truly was going to be profitable, I think it should be in stone that they have letters of intent, leases, and feasibility studies to make sure this thing can work in the long haul. Mm. And we should definitely get really rewarded for it as owning it, because basically we could be balkanizing other areas of town, such as the mall, losing tenants possibly.
Mm-hmm.
And are we just shifting our tax base? Are we just trying to try to, is it a shell game? Just that we bring something in over here and we forget we lose it over there.
I mean, you know, once again, today the paper had a letter signed by 7 former mayors of West Hartford.
Yeah, a lot of those.
All the way back to Ellsworth Grand, who I think was mayor Lister lived in West Hartford. And all of them saying it was a good proposal.
Yeah, a lot of those are the ones who gave the land away that people are angry about.
Mm-hmm.
Bridal Path, a lot of those were involved through the process over the years of the town just, you know, historically, giving away its assets or selling them for peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
When they're not looking forward to, there's not much green space or buildings left. This is the heart of our town.
And again, they're basing it on data that was provided by a marketer's sales pitch, not based on independent studies.
Well, we're out of time. Please promise after Tuesday, no matter what happens, that everybody in the Star Fruit will just really be really, really quiet for a long time.
Really? We want our life back.
Okay.
Thanks.
The Tiger Woods does his wedding for $1.5 million. The wedding band he picks out, Hootie and the Blowfish. The REO Speedwagon was not available. It's time for Sports Night Pod, the very French sports discussion segment of Mr. Mike Crispino, Mr. Bruce Stevens, and myself. Louis Condelamere.
When you said wedding band, I thought you were talking about the ring.
The Wolfsburg is also coming in here. I think he wants to be a part of this sports thing.
We can't let him in here.
How many French guys can you get in one room?
Yeah.
Four. The White Fang and Black Tooth question you asked about. Did someone answer?
No.
Oh, well, that's that he had these little characters with their, like, furry gloves. And that was White Fang
you
and Black Tooth.
Any idea how stupid you look?
Thank God this is radio.
He's the vice president of an advertising agency.
You've never seen me present a TV spot. You should see what I wear for those.
Did we get that on tape?
My God.
Oh.
One other thing.
All right.
Just to let you know. So then we can get into what you want to talk about.
Yeah. It's like Fred Thompson. Fred Thompson just goes back and forth, you know. He's either, you know, running the U.S. Senate, or he's on some cheesy, you know, Law and Order thing.
Law and Order, or he's the head of an airport or something.
Who else does that?
Yeah. Well, I lost the vote today, honey. I'm going to be on the set tomorrow.
Yeah.
And
actually, they should bring out back Ironsides with Max Cleland in it.
No.
Think about it. You know, Max has got he needs a job like everybody else.
It could be a good gig.
Yeah, it could be a very great gig for Max.
Don't.
I mean, if U.S. senators are going to go into these little drama roles, I mean, think about it. Or you know what they should
don't
bring?
Don't encourage
him. I'm going to stop now.
You just open the
that
door.
That was my fault.
Who's the guy?
You know what you're going to do?
Yeah. Can I talk about
you're going to regret this in 20 minutes.
Who's the guy from Hawaii? You know the guy I'm talking about.
Dinoway.
Hawaii 5-0. He gets, like, the Kono role or something like that.
I like it. And the tourism dollars build up in the state because they're filming there. I think it's a win-win.
That's a great idea. All right, what is it? So, they could just have the debate sponsored by somebody. I mean, it does kind of taint the process, and it's already a pretty badly tainted process. Can you imagine Nader if that happens? Buick brings you the,
that's right,
you know.
That's right.
Wouldn't you really have a Buick?
That's right. Or Pinto, perhaps. Ford Pinto sponsors his.
Ralph will be just, you know, he'll be like setting himself on fire.
Well, that's one way to make sure he doesn't participate in the debate. If they want to keep him out the next time, they could just say it's going to be sponsored by some corporate giant entity that he hates.
They could have it at a casino, too. I'm sure the Mohican Sun, you have it at the Wolf Pit.
What a great idea.
I think the whole gambling nature kind of the Wolf Pit is a nice touch, too.
Have it there. They could get the money over to the networks. Have you been continuing to watch commercials?
We're still watching. You know, fortunately, we are joking how he couldn't stay on one subject. And that there was one commercial that seemed to be on one subject, and about 15 seconds in, it felt like the commercial was going to be over, and he's talking, I don't know, maybe about the economy or something. And then he starts saying, and by the way, I also feel this about health care, and this is what I would do about Iraq, and here's what I think about the Sudan.
Well, there's at least one of them, and maybe more, where he gets to what you think is the end. He goes, right. I'm John Kerry, and I approve this ad, because we've also got to do something about stem cell research, and also about highway safety, and global warming. How about that, too? You know, the ad's over.
Right.
Shut up.
Right. You can almost imagine him doing the commercial and pointing at his watch. Oh, wait, I have 5 more seconds here. Let me talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just so unpointed, and it just makes for very, very bad commercials. And,
Bush's commercials are not great, but they're better.
They're better because they're very consistent.
And he's good at walking, too.
He's one of
the best walkers I've ever seen.
He's got that cowboy presidential walk. All his commercials begin with him walking in front of the White House.
He kind of walks like he has a load in his pants, but it's very effective for some reason. He has this kind of slight, you know, sort of side-to-side thing that he's doing.
It's an interesting walk, and all his commercials start that way. So you know that this is the president, and he's very strong, and then he just goes on. So there's a consistency about it.
Need to use it.
Can't you hear this tomorrow?
Do you hear what Steve Wolfberg said?
I didn't say any of that.
That was really awful. Wolfberg said the president made in his pants.
And this is the way. Now, this is a good example of how political ads are made. They take one thing, take it out of context, and spin it into 30 seconds of something that never happened.
That's how people make talk radio, too.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Well,
good. We find somebody else here at the station we can hate.
Who'd that be?
Well, we'll deal with his. You deal with him. We'll deal with this big hiney in our own good time.
No, you can't bail on me. You're going to do the rest of the show.
I'm not bailing. I'm not bailing on you.
Well, we're here with Steve Wolfberg, the much beloved.
Say these things.
And he's a small hiney.
Make me cry. I'm laughing so hard.
Yeah, well, who do you think Wolfberg out there to whip up on this guy? All right, so Steve Wolfberg is the creative director of Grown and Company. And
I bet he wished he'd hammer that point home right about now.
He came in here to do a guest appearance.
Yes.
So are there any commercials out there, any campaign commercials out there we like? We don't really like any of these.
Well, you know, we were going back to, we're living the classics, the LBJ Daisy commercial, the Ronald Reagan, It's Morning Again in America, which was a positive ad, but maybe the best one ever done because, you know, it was based on his very strong brand and it painted a picture of difference between he and the Democrats, but did it in a very positive way, not a negative way. And that's why that one is always in all of the books for
the best. Jack or Chewy commercials are pretty damn good.
Classics.
Yeah.
Who's he?
The guy running against Dodd.
Like I said, who's he?
Notice how they really pump up Jack during this commercial.
Dodd has good commercials. That commercial with I've only seen the one with a firefighter who claims that
there's another one. I saw the firefighter one, but there's another one.
But it's a good commercial, except for the thing where the firefighter says he's there on the 911 line with you, because he's not.
Well, they've got a new one now. Dodd actually puts on turnout gear and jumps on a truck and they actually take off.
Nice touch. Yeah, I mean, you know, as
people you ever hose down with a wet t-shirt on their car.
Well, that counts.
Can I go back to my wife's bag and give you the invitation again?
All right.
Oh, man, no, I'm not going
to
do it. No, I'm not. No, I just want to stay away from everything you guys are saying.
What do you want to say?
How often do I get to hear that?
I don't know. What did you want to talk about?
No, I thought we were going to talk about political ads, but I think we've said it all. They generally stink.
Every once in a while you see a great one. The bear one was a great one.
The bear, the Ronald Reagan bear, representing the Russian threat in the woods, was a classic. Again, some symbolism, simple, playing on emotions. We were talking about all the great symbols.
To derail that Mondale juggernaut that was
because really, the polls, he was getting within 40 points of the polls, I think, when that spot ran, if I'm not mistaken.
But that was a great spot. And actually, the one that we look at, that's almost impossible to describe, but if you look at this thing, there's this thing called the Living Room Candidate, which is at the Museum of the Moving Image, which is an online museum that has advertising.
It's great. Livingroomcandidate.org.
And you can look at commercials going back to 1952, where they're all kind of animated. In fact, we're coming full circle, because the things that everybody wants to see now are these Jib-Jab commercials,
right.
One of which is debuting on Leno tonight.
Is it? I didn't know
there's a new Jib-Jab animated commercial that has, I don't know, has Donald Rumsfeld dancing upside down or something. That's what everybody wants to see. They're not even really commercials. But
well, they're entertaining. Yeah. People want to be entertained, even with political spots, and there's nothing entertaining about what's done. It's just the same old bad formula stuff. And it doesn't compel people to do much about the commercials.
If you go back to like 52 to the Adlai Stevenson commercials, none of those really horrible animated commercials were like for Kent cigarettes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And really, that's what they had for political commercials.
Right. I mean, they're just walking around with placards with the candidates' names on them. It was a very simple time back then, but that's all they did 50 years ago.
But like the best commercials were, in fact, the Johnson Goldwater commercials, because not only is there the Daisy one, but we watched this 4-minute commercial.
It was a miniseries.
It's unbelievable. It's a 4-minute-long commercial, and it's just a guy talking to the camera. And he's explaining why he's always been a Republican, but he can't vote for Goldwater because Goldwater is too weird.
Right. Confessions of a Republican is what it was called.
Yeah.
And the guy now appears on the Chappelle Show. It's true. He's one of the comedians on the Chappelle Show. Yeah.
Well, anyway.
That's it.
We're done.
Thank you.
We need to thank Steve Wolfberg from Cronin & Company.
Thank you. We're not working on
the people from IHateBlueBackSquare.com and our producer, Bobby Sherwood.